Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Tim Gordon. Oregon is taking on the Trump administration right now on two fronts, elections and the economy. A multi-state lawsuit challenges a recent executive order tied to mail-in voting, while a separate legal fight targets tariffs the state says are driving up costs for businesses and consumers. We sat down with Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield to break down both battles and what they mean for Oregonians. And joining us today, Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield. Thanks so much for being here.
Absolutely. Always good to see you.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you. We know you're a busy man, so we'll get right to the questions. You recently announced Oregon has joined yet another lawsuit against the Trump administration, along with more than 20 states and D.C., over a new executive order by the president that has to do with the federal government restricting mail-in voting and expanding federal control over elections. Go into more detail about that executive order and why Oregon wants to block it.
Yeah, I mean, it's really simple. This is another example of the president stepping out of the lanes, the powers that Congress gave him. At no time did our framers of our Constitution want one of the most powerful people in our country to be able to regulate and control our elections. That's pretty darn obvious, and the Constitution explicitly says that. And that's effectively the crux of our lawsuit, to sit there and say, hey, Mr. President, you don't get those powers. For us as Oregonians, the things that really should strike us and cause us a tremendous amount of concern is we've been doing vote by mail for 30 years. We've done it successfully. We've done it accurately with Republicans as Secretary of State, with Democrats as Secretary of State. Right now, the prince is trying to weaponize our U.S. Postal Service, and where we as Oregonians used to see that, and frankly should still see that, as a conduit to exercise our right to vote, the president wants to make that a gatekeeping entity to exercise that right. It's a very interesting flip. Postal Service has no business in our elections other than making sure that we get our ballots delivered on time.
And this has to do with them wanting us to put out an eligible voters list. And how does the U.S. Postal Service come into play there?
Well, here's the thing. The Postal Service, depending, because this is such a vague order, in theory, could deny certain ballots from being returned or being delivered. And that is, again, kind of what I'm talking about. They're being viewed as a gatekeeper now, where they're wanting to weaponize this Postal Service versus, hey, their job is to make sure that mail gets delivered, as opposed to gatekeeping which ballots get delivered.
So the president continues to make claims without evidence of mass voter fraud and blames a lot of it on mail-in voting. What's your response to that?
I always just go back to like what we as Oregonians say, right? Like, we know, I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat, we want accurate and honest elections. We have real data. We've had Republican secretaries of state that have talked about the integrity of our elections. We have Democrats that talk about the integrity of our elections as done by vote by mail here in this state. So we live in a unique period in time where actual real data does not play as big of a role as it once did, right? And the rhetoric rises to the top. And so my hope here to Oregonians, for all of us, that we can stay grounded in real facts as opposed to the rhetoric that you can see on Twitter or whatever the current social media platform is.
And the fact is, Oregon's been a trailblazer, really starting, pioneering mail-in voting over other states in the country. There are a few other lawsuits in this same arena against the Trump administration, including fighting a requirement to show proof of citizenship to vote and cross-checking state voter rolls against federal databases. Can you talk about those issues and where they stand now?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple of executive orders where we filed a lawsuit and have already been successful. We've had a case where the federal government has sued us as a state to make sure that we're turning over data or wanting us to turn over data. For instance, our voter rolls. And right now you have a Trump administration that has already abused the use of private and confidential information in various other ways during the last year. We've offered the federal government, hey, you can have the publicly available information, such as addresses and names, that everyone else has access to. However, you don't get that private confidential information that, frankly, no law allows you to be entitled to. And that's some of the disputes that are going on. And again, in those cases, you know, what we really try and do of objectively, you know, take our cases into court. And because we've been doing that, and hopefully in a what people perceive as a nonpartisan way, we've been very successful in the court so far.
How do they stand right now? Are there things out there that are getting anywhere close to resolution or?
So in some of the cases, you're seeing the federal government actually withdraw from certain arguments. Other ones are continuing to trickle in. The lower courts have ruled with us when we are getting rulings on these cases.
All right. Well, a statement last week by a White House spokesperson said, quote, election integrity has always been a top priority for President Trump, and the American people sent him back to the White House because they overwhelmingly supported his common sense election integrity agenda. And the president will do everything in his power to defend the safety and security of American elections and to ensure that only American citizens are voting in them. Again, a chance to respond for you.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I think, you know, my dad's Republican. My mother's a Green Party member. When you look at both of them, they both want accurate and honest elections, and so do I. And so I appreciate what the president is saying, that he wants accurate and honest elections. But the fact remains that he continues to look back to 2020 and saying that that election was stolen. I think we as Americans have to look forward and focus on the values of what does it really mean to have an accessible system where we as citizens can exercise our right to vote. And I think we've got that here in Oregon resoundingly. And frankly, I think we should be looking at Oregon as a model for the country in terms of accessibility and ease of voting, and most importantly, the integrity of our system. And so I think that's what we need to focus aspirationally forward, not do what the president does and go back and say, hey, I didn't like how 2020 went. I think it was stolen from me. Now I want to manipulate the process going forward. And you got to remember what he's doing right now, because this is what politicians who are historically unpopular do. They try and start messing with our elections. They like to rig our elections. That's what they started doing with redistricting across this country, right? So again, looking at what that story is, what's really going on here, historically unpopular president, historically unpopular actions, now wants to start messing with our elections. I think we should focus on the values and look forward.
And as you step back from all of that, the fact is that voting is really handled by states. It's in their purview, right? Can you describe that?
Yeah, I mean, and this is what is in the Constitution, right? And I think it was the beautiful part about the way our Constitution was drafted. Again, we didn't want the most powerful person in the country to be able to control and regulate our elections. That's a bad idea. The framers of our Constitution knew it, and they put it in writing. And the idea is that if Congress is silent on time, place, and manner of elections, that power goes to the states, right? And we use objective data. And part of the reason you want that, right, is whenever you have federal lists or federal information, we all know there's a separation between the federal government and individuals. The states, generally speaking, when you look historically, always have more accurate and up-to-date information, which is incredibly important when we're trying to focus on the integrity and the accuracy of our elections. And that's why this has been left to the states, Republican and Democrat, across the country.
All right, Attorney General, final question on voting now. Are there any changes that could be made to our voting system here in Oregon to strengthen it?
Right. I am always looking at important ways, and this is a question that frankly really should involve the Secretary of State, the Oregon legislature, and the public. The first thing that I look to is how do you continue to remove barriers for people to be able to access their ability to vote, right? And in a modernizing world, I think we should all be looking at how are we continuing to modernize our electoral systems to make sure that we're meeting people where they are, making sure that voters the information they need to cast an informed decision. I think we're in an increasingly strained world where we're just trying to find out what we're gonna put on the dinner table at the end of the evening, and we get time to vote. And when we have that time, we wanna have as much information in front of us as possible. So I think that's incredibly important. How do we modernize getting new information? And then at the same time, I think there's a broader conversation about accessibility. And then the third thing I would say is, I think what we really need to do is start getting back real facts and bringing back the actual real facts about the integrity of our systems here in the United States, and educating voters about those systems and how difficult it is if someone even wanted to engage in fraud, talking about what's really going on in these clerk's offices across our state.
All right, switching gears now, you know, you're really a frequent flyer these days. In fact, you will soon be in New York again to take on the president over his international tariffs. Now, you led the effort and beat him on this in round one. Now it's round two. Describe the history here first, and then what do you hope to accomplish and why this time?
Yeah, so for folks just to kind of get kind of caught up or remember where we've been, more than a year ago, we filed our first lawsuit against President Trump's unconstitutional tariffs. And the reason we did that is he was abusing an emergency power. All three levels of courts, all the way up to the Supreme Court, agreed with us. Right after we won in the Supreme Court, in the same breath, after attacking the United States Supreme Court justices, the president decided to use another law that had never been used for these types of tariffs again. And, you know, here's the thing. If the president wants to do tariffs and use the appropriate statutes, he can do so. Congress has given him some powers. However, when you're going to twist statutes, lawyerly ways, we're going to hold you accountable in court. And that's what he's done. And so that's why you have the second lawsuit. And the reason these things are so darn important, right? If you go talk to small businesses in Oregon, if you go talk to individuals, if you look at the costs of these cases, we are feeling that across the state. We're feeling it as an economy in our state. And so this lawsuit is incredibly important. We have that case filed. We're in court Friday morning in New York arguing that in the Court of International Trade, which is the court of original jurisdiction in cases like these.
All right. Maybe you can get more specific about the damages. Can you quantify the damage these tariffs have done or are doing to Oregonians? What's the evidence that you have for that?
Yeah, this is the thing that I think is really important for folks to realize, because it feels very speculative. What's the impact of the tariffs? You don't always see that when you go to the store. So what I like to do is use the president's lawyers and the president's own words when we're thinking about this. In front of the United States Supreme Court justices, they talked about, and if I remember correctly, it was anywhere up to 70 to 80% of these tariffs were being paid by Americans. There was a recent study put out by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that showed that it was about 90% of these tariffs are being paid by Americans, right? So we use institutional figures. You shouldn't take my word for it. You should look at what we call trusted third-party validators to say, hey, what's that real impact? What's the economic impact? Then, more importantly, talk to all of your friends that are small businesses. Talk to restaurant owners. Talk to people in your community, and they will tell you story after story, because we've heard them, about the impacts of how these costs have increased, which then means the cost for you and I, when we go to the restaurant, when we go to the store, those costs are increased for us as well.
Yeah, and we profiled many of those small businesses here on KGW. So what's the status of the tariff refund program that was put in place after that first Supreme Court decision in February? Is that money going out yet? And do you have any advice for business owners affected here in Oregon?
Absolutely. This is one of the most bizarre things that happened. Right after we get this win in the Supreme Court, the Trump says, well, hey, I'm not paying that money back. The irony of him saying that is his lawyers had been in the lower court saying we are going to pay the money back. And they were telling courts we're going to pay the money back. So don't actually pause these tariffs while this case is pending. Shortly thereafter, I think kind of they got their dots connected in the federal government, and they said, I have made assertions in the Court of International Trade. We are going to find ways to make sure that every business that has paid money gets repaid. And so that's a process that is in development in Congress right now. I think there are some members of Congress looking to find quicker and more efficient ways to deliver that money to consumers and to businesses that have paid. And so I expect that process to roll out over the upcoming months. But here's the thing. When you unconstitutionally take money out of the pockets of businesses here in the United States, you got to put that money back in their pocket, right? So it's pretty simple, and that's what they're trying to do.
Yep, and I think it's big money, too. I think I heard the figure of more than $160 billion in that refund issue. Well, whether you are for or against President Trump and his policies, most everyone can agree there's a lot going on. Every day it seems like there's something new. So what's your standard as Attorney General strategy for what Oregon chooses to fight with these legal challenges?
But first and foremost, this is only one of many responsibilities we have at the Oregon Department of Justice, and we kind of classify this as how do we uphold the values of Oregonians. And so through that lens, we look at this stuff very objectively. A, when an action is taken by the president, we have to ask the question, are Oregonians being harmed? If the answer is yes, then you go to the second part of the analysis, which is, has a law or the Constitution been broken? If the answer to that is yes, then we say, does Oregon have standing, which is the legal standard to us for to be in court to represent Oregonians? And if the answers to all of those are yes, then we file a lawsuit and we move forward. Because I think we've had this pretty, what I would say, very high standard for how we do this, we've been incredibly successful in a lot of the lawsuits that we've been bringing.
Well, you are Oregon Attorney General at a very interesting time in our history. Dan Rayfield, thanks again for joining us today.
Absolutely. Always thanks for having me, Tim.
Welcome back to Straight Talk. An iconic piece of Portland has returned to downtown. We are, of course, talking about the Thompson Elk statue, which was removed from its pedestal following protests in 2020. Well, now it's back, restored and standing tall in downtown Portland. John Adams has more.
Here. Under picture-perfect blue skies Thursday morning, the Thompson Elk statue made its return to downtown Portland. Residents came out in droves to say hello to an old friend.
And I'm really emotional because it's definitely been a part of this city's history. And I'm really, really, really excited to see it.
It's the beginning of downtown coming back. It's a very, very important day.
The 9-foot-tall statue was built in 1900 and was a fixture in the city for 120 years before it was damaged during protests in 2020.
There was some scratches. There was a lot of soot embedded in the coating on it. There was graffiti all over it.
Conservator Robert Kruger was tasked with restoring the statue. He was able to remove the paint and imperfections before adding a new coat, one that allows graffiti to be removed without damaging the elk.
It turned out really well. You know, I'm happy to see him looking like he always did.
Nearly 10 different city bureaus banded together on the $1.8 million project, which engineers call faithful yet progressive.
There has been a lot of change in the city. Even the elk fountain itself has seen some change, some new stones, some new features, but at the same time, it's still familiar.
Some we spoke with see the elk's return as a possible metaphor for the city as a whole.
I think it's symbolic of Portland being a bruised city, and now it's trying to stiffen back up and become alive again. So it's beautiful to see.
And our thanks to John Adams for that report. There were a lot of different players behind the restoration of the elk, including the Portland Parks Foundation. In a statement, Executive Director Jessica Green said in part, quote, "The restoration of the Thompson Elk Fountain is a testament to the power of partnership and what we can do when we all work together. This is a beautiful moment for Portland, and we look forward to celebrating the Elk's return with everyone this Sunday." Yeah, it's going to be a big celebration. That partnership also included a lot of city leaders. That includes Councilor Dan Ryan, who is here with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tim.
You're one of the biggest boosters and supporters of this to make it happen, so we're really glad you're here. You were there for the installation this week, the reinstallation of the Thompson Elk in downtown Portland. So how did it feel to see that happen, and why was it so important to get that elk back?
Well, I'll start with why it was so important to get it back. Thanks for having me on to celebrate the elk. It was at a time when I was serving on the old city council. There was five of us, and there were a group of concerned citizens that were making their rounds, talking about the monuments in general. But they specifically honed in on the elk. And I got to thank Bill and Kit Hotkins of this group called the Concerned Citizens, a group of elders, that just made the case for how important it was for them to see the elk fully restored. That was a key word, fully restored. And so at that time, there were talks amongst all the bureaus about doing it in their own way, if you will. And so it was important to do a resolution that herded all the cats, got all the bureaus that are such a big part of this, especially the Water Bureau, PBOT, and Parks, to get on the same page. So I'm grateful that the rest of my colleagues at that time unanimously passed this, and I was proud to be the champion to get it across the finish line.
It really was a big process, wasn't it, to be able to collaborate like that and to make this happen for an elk that had been pretty badly damaged?
Exactly. That's why the full restoration was key. And it really is a full restoration. The granite comes from Vermont. The little animals they're cougars, I believe, the spigots of water that come out the fountain, sure. Those are from Ohio. So this came from many time zones, and we stayed on budget. We allocated that money from the general fund, from the insurance payment. Then extra money was raised by the Portland Parks Foundation to do the design work. And so it truly was a team effort. And I'm really grateful to the workers on the ground. I met many of them this week down there, and they had so many stories to tell. And they were very proud of the fact that they stayed on budget.
Yeah, and it's back better than ever, really. It took a while. Yeah. I mean, initially the hope was the elk would be back in place in late 2022 or early 23. That's right on the city website. You look at the history of its work. That obviously didn't happen. What were you hearing from people along the way, and why did it take so long to get to 2026 here?
Well, some of it was because we had the commitment to being fully restored. So that was a big part of it. And so I kept getting the news that the timeline was changing. I just think it's important when you're doing hard things to get it done, and there's always going to be headwinds. But the important thing is it's done. We're celebrating it this weekend, and it's important for Portland.
Talk about the restoration work of the elk itself. I mean, it finishes with a wax coat. It just looks beautiful. That was intricate work.
It was really important also to get some new lighting. for various reasons. One, so at night people can enjoy that. And I just have to say how important the elk is. I think it is more than a symbol. Portland's been through a lot. We've all been through a lot. And there's something about the word restoration. It's different than the word revenge and rage. And we've been dealing with a lot of that. And people need to feel hope. And so what I saw this week when people were gathering to watch it be hoisted in is just random Portlanders pausing, smiling, and really feeling good about where they live. And that's the Portland that we want to live in. And Portland and all great cities have great public art, and we deserve nice things.
Yep, and it is an interesting dichotomy, really, a little bit. You know, Portland is a great city. It's a city that believes in free speech and the First Amendment and speaking out and protesting and demonstrating, yet sometimes that has done some damage to some of our favorite things. How do you kind of put those two things together and see a city that is still growing now?
I think my hometown's always been a city where people are free to express themselves, and it's a quirky city, and it's a city that also really values tradition. And so it's not lost on me that the I almost called it the Four Court Fountain. That's how old I am. The Keller Fountain is back on. The elk is returning. And I think these iconic public art pieces allow Portlanders to feel grounded and that the downtown is really coming back. And so we must celebrate those moments. This is part of our comeback.
How important is that? Maybe it's an obvious question.
Well, I think I'm a lifelong Portlander. I went away to college and did some work in other cities and came back. And I'll never forget the time when I was coming back from back east when I was in school, back east, and it was December, so there's a dusting of snow. And I just had kind of a tough conversation with a friend, and we were driving up, and I saw the elk with the holiday wreath on, and it made me feel better suddenly, instantly I felt better. So this is to all you Portlanders out there. You know what I'm talking about. And so this is a win for all of us that have that special connection. And it welcomes visitors to Portland. And it's right in the civic area where we do debate, where people come to City Hall and say sometimes not such charitable things at all of us for the reasons of free speech, where people go to pay a traffic ticket, where people go to jury duty. It's in the civic district. So we have the elk looking up to the hills, looking at its herd, as it always has been. There's some controversy. Is it the same way it always was? It's actually, the neck is still going up, looking at the hills for its herd, and we can't do anything about Peabot changing directions of roads. So it's really for all of us to restore and remember, and how important that is as a society, as a culture. And I'm really grateful the elders of this town got through to me and got through to other people on City Council to do the right thing.
Yeah. Was there ever a point you thought it might not happen, that it wasn't going to happen? How'd you push it through?
I don't really think that way, or I would have ran for office in September of 2020. So I'm kind of built to do hard things. You know, you get knocked down, you get back up. So no, I was 100% clear that Portlanders want their elk back. And that's why all Portlanders seem to be celebrating the return.
Yeah, and now it's sitting in a better situation too. I understand the work really on the base and pedestal and the water system is so improved.
It's seismically improved. The lighting's obviously there now. The graffiti tarnish, whatever that is, that makes it so that's helpful. Mm-hmm. So it was updated to what the reality of today's concerns. And also Peabot did more of a bumper around it. Yeah. And I really got to give the people at Water credit. They really went to great lengths to keep this on budget.
Yeah. And now when you look at that elk, what's the one phrase that comes to mind for you?
Resilience.
Yes.
Excellent. One word I think.
Resilience. I think that's a great word. Yeah, for sure. All right, we're going to celebrate this weekend. Talk about that. People can come out.
Come on down. Bring your families. It's at 1 o'clock. Of course, there's got to be food. There'll be food carts. There'll be music. There'll be a DJ. And there will be some ritual. And there will be some speeches. And mostly it's about playing and taking time to connect with one another. Might be a little misty, but Portlanders know how to celebrate when there's a little bit of mist coming down.
We could totally handle that for sure. Well, we put up the graphic and you said it's Sunday from 1
o'clock. Sunday from 1 to 4.
Fantastic. Yeah. So hopefully people come on out and celebrate with everybody.
Portland, we deserve to celebrate.
And thank you for joining us. We'll see you again next time on Straight Talk.